It was eighth grade when I volunteered at the Milpitas Library, but it wasn't this building. It was some other building.
Nice.
But I think next time I'll just call ahead and we'll just secure the room. It'll just be like a lot easier.
Yeah.
What could happen next time is I call, reserve 1 hour, and then you can call to reserve the other hour, and then we just get 2 hours. Because I think you get maximum 1 hour per person. So
that's good. And then we could like call back on different like landlines and disguise our voices, and then we have 4 hours.
Can I get the room? Oh, what's the soonest? Oh, okay, 1 p.m. That's like, what is that? Elmo.
Edo, my name is Suresh.
You're right. This is really like my podcast. We're recording, by the way. So,
Suresh, I can do the. Sir, why did you switch from an Indian accent to a Chinese accent? I don't know what you're saying.
Oh my god, this is all right. That's a great beginning of the first one. That's great. That's wonderful. It'll only go downhill from here, folks. Like, trust me. So we'll just get rolling here. I'm here with Victor, and he is kind of a baller, and I don't really want to go into his background because that's really not my job, so I'll just ask him. And I'm a really lazy podcaster, so all right, well, yeah, what's your background? So you start out as a guitar teacher, you kind of like involved in like marketing and made hella bank. Yeah, so I guess just tell us how you got started and how you ended up sitting in like a corner of a library.
So I'm Victor, and I started my first like real job at a laundromat, and it was my dad's laundromat. And I knew from that laundromat that I really didn't like working for other people, because when I was sitting there and I was just counting money, right, this laundromat would produce a lot of money, and I would be only making like $7, $8, $9 an hour. And I really didn't see like why you have to do like all these routine tasks, and like that's not where my mind was at. I was really looking at like talking to people. I really enjoyed talking to people, like customer service, understanding them, helping them come back, talk to them about their life, understand their problems. So a couple of years later, I started kind of transforming my hobby, which was making music and teaching. And that's how I got into starting guitar, teaching guitar. But during my teaching, like, I realized that I was a better teacher and salesperson than an actual guitar player.
And oh, okay.
So I kind of been like, I think if I just take my top two skills here, I can kind of maximize it instead of trying to do all five things that, like, I'm not as world class. So I decided to take my students or people that I know and be like, hey, do you know anyone that needs like marketing help? Because I kind of marketed myself pretty widely doing the guitar teaching. Because during in 2010, 2011, a lot of guitar teachers didn't really market themselves widely. They didn't even have a website, or they had a very shitty website, right? Which had like zero SEO, right?
Mm-hmm.
So my name, just like every time you searched up guitar teacher San Jose, my name would like pop up like that.
Oh, wow.
So I dominated that market for a while, but I didn't really find strong interest in it. So while I was doing that, I just like asked for referrals, and then some people referred me into companies or like small companies. And I found a little niche with like tech people that were consultants, where they built apps. Because during 2011 to 2013-14, a lot of Indian people in the Bay Area were building apps for other people, because they were doing a lot of startups.
Okay.
So startups were like really like going uphill from that point, because Uber was taking off, right? So everybody thought they can start their own Uber, right? So during that time period, I helped a lot of these people scale, because they were very good at developing the apps and creating very good apps, because they outsourced their labor to India or to other countries, but they weren't really good at customer acquisition. So I helped them scale their customer acquisition, and I took a percentage off that, right? Sometimes I charged like a nice lump sum in the beginning for like 3, 6, 12 month projects to basically have more clients on board. where they would just focus on scaling their business infrastructure, and I would just be scaling their sales team. And I did that for a while, and then I jumped into other things, like right now I'm jumping into real estate.
Okay, yep, yep.
And I'm maybe starting a podcast or starting a YouTube channel, because I'm really starting to explore now my part of life, just to explore more of my hobbies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And also to scale my presence, because I focus a lot on the marketing for other people, and I really steered away from like social media. Like, I don't even use social media at all, not even for myself, right? Because a lot of my skill set is talking in person.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I'm very good at one-on-one, and my conversion rate is very high, like 80%, 90% to 100%, because I'm able to understand a person, go into their psychology, and ask them the questions that they really need to be asked. Like, a common question is like, what are you looking for, when I ask people, right? And what have you done to actually like get to your destination? What is that, right? And then what have you done in the last 3 months? And then usually those three questions tell me a really accurate map of where they are and what they're going to and what they've done, right? For example, if I ask them, what are you looking for? Oh, I'm looking for like, to scale up my business.
Yeah.
And then I ask them, awesome, like, what have you done in the last 3 months? And if they haven't like done anything, or they say like, oh yeah, I've been going to meetups and blah, 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 right? And then I'll ask them, how often do you go to meetups? And they'll be like, oh, I go like once a month. I'm like, wow, once a month is not that great if you're not getting the results. You have to go maybe once a week, right? Or just double it, right? If something doesn't work, you just need to double it, right? And it's common for people to say like, oh, if it doesn't work, then stop doing it, right? It's actually, maybe you haven't done enough input for the output to happen,
mm-hmm.
right? You just need to double the input, and then once you find out which channel is working or which the amount of frequency is working, it's common like when you're like saying learning a language, and if you only learn one word a day, you can't learn to speak really fast.
Right.
Right.
True.
It's kind of like you don't have enough input.
Yeah, die before. Yeah,
you'll die before you get to the language.
Yeah, yeah.
You need to have massive amount of input, and then the output can come out.
Mm-hmm.
So now that I've kind of like stepped back, right, and like I built my financial stuff, now I'm going more towards like, what do I really enjoy doing? And I really enjoy personality, like psychology. I like really deeply enjoy, like I could do this forever and for free.
Oh, wow.
Right? I just really like analyzing people's like psyches, right? And not just analyze and understand, I just want to analyze and kind of push them forward. It's sort of like when we were talking earlier on my podcast, like CBT, right?
Yeah.
CBT is all about understanding where they are, building their rapport, and then helping them with questions to build them up.
Right.
And then, okay, now you kind of understand, right? I'm not helping you, I'm just asking you questions.
Yeah.
And then now that I've asked you questions, I'm keeping you accountable now to the answers that you said. And then we're going to have this relationship where we're going to keep going forward. So that's kind of my background, and I'm really focused on probably the podcast and real estate at this point.
Okay.
And passively working on my, businesses on the side. That's where I'm at.
So when did you start working for the drug front? I mean, laundromat that your dad was only paying you $9 an hour that apparently made a lot of money. Was it like right after high school or?
It was during high school.
Okay.
So I started teaching guitar when I was 17.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So that was my last year of senior high school. And so I think I was, laundromat was 15, maybe 16, but I didn't really like it. I only worked there for a couple months, and he sold the laundromat, so mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He doesn't work there anymore. So 15, 16.
Oh, okay. And then, so I guess like college probably never interested you too much, like strict, like it's not chaotic enough probably.
Yeah.
I
thought that was actually pretty beneficial, because I think a lot of people, they go to college and they don't know what the fuck they're doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of be like, I'm gonna find out at the end of 2 or 3 years like what I'm gonna do or something like that, or like I'm going to college to fulfill my parents' expectations on me.
Yeah.
or like I'm going to college to party or to find myself.
Yeah, yeah.
But I found like instead of going to college, I basically went to a music school.
Yeah.
Online music school.
Okay.
And then I also like just went to like the bar or like a meetup, and then I basically talked to people that were older than me, that were more experienced. Like I was always friends with people 3 or 4 or 5 years older than me.
Oh, okay.
Right. And then that was my kind of in group, and I had to search for my own friends. Like I didn't have a place where I can just go to school and show up and then right. my friends were like, you know, like 3 or 4 places away,
right,
or join a frat or have a dorm mate where my friends were like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I was always placed in the environment where, like, if I wanted to make friends, I'm going to make friends, right?
Yeah.
It was always active, and it was never passive.
Yeah. So, I mean, in a sense, I feel that's good, right? Because in college, it's like, oh, I have these friends that are pretty convenient, so there's no real filter or, like, vetting of, like, hey, you're not good enough, you know, to be blunt about it. Or, like, hey, you know, like, this is not a good match, right? Yeah. While you're being offensive, playing offense, trying to find new people, it's like, oh, these are people that can fit in my life in this way, and you're really, I think, proactively thinking about that, where it's like, oh, if it's your roommate or like someone on the same floor, then it's just like, oh yeah, you're my friend because, well, honestly, it's just kind of convenient. And a lot of that does happen, right? So you kind of get like kind of lower quality friends if you're sort of framing it right. in terms of, you know, loyalty, success,
and you kind of stick with some of them sometimes, right? Yeah, because you're too lazy to get more.
Yeah, and it is a lot of work to find new friends, right?
It is.
I don't even know what are some good ways to make friends.
I think common good ways, because it's you need to frame it not just like making relationships, because I think making relationships kind of have a different kind of feeling to it. Because relationships, like, people overvalue relationships and they stick with it too much. But if you look at from like a sales side, like, it's just outbound and inbound.
Okay.
Right? Like, you could focus on a place, a center, build up inbound resources where you can just tap into, right? Like, join a meetup group where there's already a center of people there,
mm-hmm.
right? Join, like, you know, create a meetup group, join fraternities, or join something that already has groups there where you're just focusing on the inbound, so you don't have to go outside, you don't have to make more friends. Versus if you're going to be strictly outbound, which is faster, you can go on dating sites, right, and create a friend portfolio. You can go to like, you know, bars, or have some good day game, go to a mall, go to events, go to chocolate festivals and stuff like that, where there's
chocolate festivals.
Go to where
you heard it here.
Go to where there's a lot of people just going to events, and you can see Angelo writing this down.
I'm just googling if there's a chocolate festival, like what the fuck that is.
I find conventions very
chocolate
very
conventions or like just regular.
For example, if you really like anime, there's mm-hmm. anime conventions, right?
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
you know for sure, God. Like everybody there
is fat
that loves anime. So if you talk to anybody and say like you really like Naruto, right, mm-hmm. and you see a person dressing up as Naruto, right, that person, if he lives in that area that you live in, you guys are best friends now.
That's true, because like no one else would be that weird. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
And it's fast, right? It's like, you like Naruto, I like Naruto, like blah 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 blah, like it's there, it's connects. Now you just need to sustain that relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now you just need to deepen that relationship and you go forward. It's the same thing, for example, Angelo really likes money, right? So he loves chasing the green.
I feel like everyone likes money, right? But not everyone admits it.
I think Angelo is a little bit more proactive about chasing the green. He told me a story that he went out of his way to double his $200.
$400,
right? He went out of his way, right, just to get the green, right? So you know when you're talking to Angelo, you gotta be a person that also chases the green or have very efficient strategies for chasing the green. Because it's just the same thing. Replace the word anime with chasing the green and you got a good friend, right?
Yeah, and I feel like it's a lot of it's kind of like old school, but it's just like, oh yeah, common interests.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you like this, I like this.
Yeah.
And we can work on this together, or, you sure. know, what have you. Yeah. Or like watch hentai together or whatever, Naruto.
Exactly. Naruto hentai.
Yeah. So speaking of green, so I guess like you transition to marketing stuff and everything, how much money, I guess, or like in like cash flow were you able to get, I guess, eventually out of the marketing?
So the structure that I was going for is about 10 to 20%.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these companies, they were generating anywhere from like 6 to 8 figures.
Okay. So you're 8 figures. Wow. Okay.
6 to 8 figures, right? So a lot of the times, like, I get 10 to 20%, but there's also I'm hiring staff.
Sure.
So, I also sent up entities where the money just cash flows to the entity.
Sure. Sure.
Before it cash flows to me.
Sure.
Right. So, you know, there's another cash flow entity that it flows to.
Yeah.
So it doesn't always flow to me, but I have nice assets that cash flow to me.
Right.
So you can get like a ballpark from anywhere from 5 to 10% of like anywhere from 7 figures.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So 5 to 10% of 7 figures, or five, like the 5 to 10% makes up 7 figures.
So it's a nice 6 to 7 figure salary.
Okay. Yes. Including like just to you, or like including like what gets funneled into your?
So it goes to me, right? That money goes to me. And then I spread it out through assets. So
it's gonna be
like 6 to 7 figures income.
Okay.
That gets taxed.
Oh, okay. I got what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. So wow, that's after everything, after expenses and everything. Yeah. So that's like pretty good. And I need to start doing that. and you say how many years did it take you to kind of build it up to this point?
So it took me like maybe 2 or 3 years. But I really knew, like, I think I first got my really good paycheck like 3 or 4 months in.
Okay.
Because once you land, let's say, how you get these clients is you go to events, whether it can be free or unpaid, where you go to conventions where you're meeting other CEOs.
Yeah.
You need to meet the decision maker that already has a company that is already funneling 6 figures. Right, or 5 figures.
Yeah.
Right, and that already has a very successful company, and what they're doing is they're looking for, or they're thinking about scaling, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And you look at their system, and you either find deficiencies in their sales, their marketing, or in their administration.
Okay. Right?
For example, like they can be very, very good at their craft.
Yeah.
They can be very good at managing the people around them. That's two qualities you need to look for.
Okay.
Right? Because if they know how to manage people, they can identify that you are a problem solver, and then that you can refine their sales systems and stuff.
Okay.
So you meet them at a convention, like non-paid or paid, and then they're probably looking around because they're trying to acquire clients.
Right.
And they're doing that themselves.
Yeah.
But if you can show that you can acquire clients 10 times faster and more efficiently, and for them just to delegate it so they can work on whatever they wanted to.
Right.
Then they want to hire you.
Right? Yeah.
Second thing is, after you find these clients, you need to show them. So maybe you either do one or two ways. You can maybe like do a coaching session for them, and then after you show them the layout and their plan work, they can do a 1 to 3 month session with you, something like that. Or you can just dive right into it and say like, hey, I'm gonna take a percentage instead of a flat fee, right? And you know, after we land our first client together, that's when I get paid, and then you take a bigger cut then.
Yeah.
So those are two ways you can do it, right? Those are the two ways that I kind of like got my first clients in the beginning. But nowadays, it's all inbound, like my referrals. Like,
oh, I see.
Like, I don't spend that much time going to these meetups anymore, right? So I'm not that familiar if it still works now, but that's how I got it in the first place.
I see what you're saying. I mean, I think just like face-to-face networking probably won't ever go out of style.
Sure.
But I mean, certainly you have, I would say, above average sales and like, you know, skills with people, right? So I guess like, how did you kind of start acquiring these sales skills and things like that? Do you think it's more natural ability? Was there like stuff that you did to increase that skill, like in a systematic way, or yeah?
So one, my personality itself, like I'm an extrovert, right? And I'm an emotional extrovert. So I feel that I have a lot of empathy and a lot of sympathy for a lot of people, regardless of their competency. Like, I can see, like, oh, this person is not that competent, or like, oh my god, this person is wasting my time, right? Like, and I don't immediately write them off. For example, when what I used to do when I first started out doing like the business networking outside my guitar lessons referral group, I talked to a lot of people, and I talked to them way too long. You know, when you go to a business network.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Yeah, you feel like you talk to this person and you know they're fucking incompetent and they'll never help you with their goal, and they just talk and talk and talk.
Yes.
And you just nod, right? And it's like
you nod and you agree because you feel like, oh, they're gonna gas out and stop talking. They just keep going and going. Yeah, I know.
Keep going.
You're like, how do you have so much shitty content?
Just, exactly. Yeah, okay. Like I can see why you fail, right? But you don't say that because you have so much empathy and sympathy, right? Mm-hmm. You don't say that out loud, but in your mind, you're just chewing and gnawing on your fingernails. So you spend 30, 40 minutes per person, and then by the time you get to like the fourth or fifth person, you're just burned out.
Yeah.
And
then, so what do you do now to shorten that?
So what I do now is I burst. So
burst.
I
like you jizz on their face.
I definitely jizz on girls' face. I don't jizz on the guy's face, but
I mean, there's no okay. Is it gay? I don't know, okay, whatever. Just keep going.
What I do is I identify. And I used to identify people that I was just interested in. For example, like, oh, this person's wearing something nice, right? Mm. Or this person looks interesting. Or this person has a cool hairstyle.
Yeah.
Or something like that. What I do now is I observe before I go into the room.
Hmm.
I observe people that look bored.
Okay.
So people that look bored or like they're a wallflower or they're not talking to anybody, I talk to them first because they're not engaged in anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not making any assumptions whether I like them or not. These are not bias filters.
Right.
They're not objective.
Right.
This person is not talking to anybody.
Yep.
So therefore, if I talk to him, they're going to talk to me.
Yeah.
Right? Just because they're not talking to anybody else. And they're coming to this for a reason, to network.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I talk to those people first.
Okay.
I say hi, hello, blah, blah, blah. And if I don't like that person, I'll be like, it's nice to meet you, right? Let's bump into each other later or something like that.
Okay. Okay.
And then I leave. This person is already assumed that nobody else is going to talk to them. Me coming to them is like a presence from God.
Oh, okay.
If I leave, God has left you.
Okay. Okay.
It's okay.
I'll work that into my sales pitch. Yeah.
So once the person has left, it's like, okay, they're going to just continue to be a wallflower, right? It's like, I didn't like go in, right? Another thing I used to do is like, if there was a group of people and they're talking to each other and they feel engaged, right? I used to just put my hand down and be like, hey, nice to meet you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then they would look at me, and then like, if I'm interesting, the whole group would talk to me.
Yeah.
And if I'm not, they'll just go back to their conversation.
Yeah.
Right? So that's a 50-50. So, and there's no way you can engage all these people at once.
Right.
Right? And so my empathy works very well one-on-one.
Mm.
Right? So I'm like, okay, great. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm just going to talk to the wallflowers. So that means I only time box it like maximum 3 to 5 minutes, right?
Oh, okay.
And if I don't like this person, right, I'm gonna be like, cool, it was nice to meet you, bounce to the next person. And this is very common, like people expect to not make contact with everybody.
Right? Okay, yeah, yeah.
And it's okay for them not to like you because you don't like everybody.
Right.
Right? I'm very concerned about making an impact on the people that I do want to make connection with.
Sure.
For example, like if I'm gonna talk to that person, I'm gonna be engaged, and if I talk to that person for an hour, it's worth it. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
I can go over, but I don't wanna go like under, you know, with the people I meet. So I don't wanna under engage, I wanna over engage, and I only can do it with a select group of people. So what I do is just burst. Like for example, I don't like this person, okay, you got your 5 minutes, I'm done with you. You
okay.
know what I mean? Next person, next person, next person, next person, next person.
Question on that, right? So like for the bursting, like for example, I came in this situation last week.
Sure.
And the guy was just like he wasn't even like contributing to a conversation in any meaningful way. He's just like complaining about his problems. And then like, I'm like, oh, have you tried this? He's like, nah, I want to do this instead. Oh, have you tried this? Nah, I want to do this instead. And he just kept complaining about his questions. But it's like nonstop. There's no gap where I could say, there's no like 2 second pause where I'm like, hey, nice to meet you. So I guess how would you handle that situation with a guy who's just like, and you think he'd stop, and then he just gives like a faucet.
So what would I do if he's machine gunning me?
Yeah, like would you just like walk away? It's like,
I would just, you know, like I give him his 3 to 5 minutes, right? Mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. I pretty much can, just because I've talked to so many people, mm-hmm. right? Because if you're bursting all the time, you're going to meet a lot of people with like at least 100, 200,000 people a year.
Yeah.
So then you're going to start to see patterns, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going to see like, oh, like this person is probably an engineer and he's telling me about this. Like I can kind of see what the conversation flow is going to look like.
Okay. Right?
I'm very interested where I don't know where the conversation is going, like,
okay,
right? So if he's machine gunning me, he's giving more input, so I really know where he's going, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I'm gonna let him get his 3 to 5 minutes, and then I'm gonna be like, oh, so you mean this? And then he's like, yeah. Or he's gonna be no, right? And if he keeps telling me no, I'm gonna be like, oh, that's, I'm so sorry, I can't help you with anything, right? But I think CJ
wow, you're a dick to CJ, huh?
Right. Or I think somebody else might be able to help you. Or like, oh, okay, so you're working in biotech and you're an engineer and you're looking for someone that's better in sales, right? And they'll be like, blah, 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 blah. Like, oh, okay, I think the person, that sales lady over there, might be able to help you, right? Well, I think you should talk to them. I can't be able to help you. I'm probably gonna go over here. It's nice meeting you, right? That, again, that's a very polite way, right?
Mm. Voice them.
I just leverage other people. There's nothing I can do, right? And me spending another 30 minutes is gonna piss him off, right? Because how do you feel you spend 30 minutes with someone and you didn't convert, right?
It's, oh yeah, that's,
it's
true.
It's such a dick move to both of you guys.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I find, like, you know, people that are very like that, they have very low EQ.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you like go away, right, they're not gonna be that upset at you for a very long time
because they don't even know what's going on. Okay,
they're not even emotionally aware that what's going on, right? And or they might be like, for example, they may be oversensitive and they just burst everywhere, right? Yeah. That's another form of low EQ.
Yeah.
Right, then you just like, they're gonna burst at everyone.
Yeah.
So as soon as you walk away, they might be grumpy for 5 minutes, but they're gonna be grumpy at somebody else in the next 5 minutes.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I think, so how I handled the situation was, like, I just interrupted him. It's like, hey, yeah, sorry to interrupt. I just gotta say, and then this is my go-to line now. It's like, oh, I'm sorry to interrupt. I just gotta say hi to a few friends I haven't seen in a while. That's in the group. They could exist. They don't exist. In this case, they did exist. But, like, even if I don't have friends, I would just tell them anyway. Yeah, to give you some context, we just got kicked out of the corner of the library, so we've relocated. And
what were we talking about?
Well, I was talking about how I make this fake excuse where I'm like, oh, I gotta say hi to my friends that don't exist, to get away from conversations I don't want to be in. And yeah, essentially that's like one of the tactics I use, because like no one can blame you for like saying hi to friends you haven't seen in a while, right? Like, oh, I gotta say hi to them before they go, so you kind of create a false time that's constraint. True. It's like, oh, they might leave in like 10 minutes. I don't want this guy to miss out on like saying hi to his friends. Unless like they have like negative EQ, where it's just like, I don't give a fuck if you see
negative EQ.
We're like, if he goes up to his friends, fuck that guy. I'm the most important person. Who does he think? And like, I don't think anyone like that. Well, I'm sure someone like that exists. I haven't ran into him yet.
I'm sure a lot of those people exist.
Yeah, you heard it here, folks. So. But I guess the main general topic was like, how do you acquire the sales skills? And you were kind of talking about going to like meetup events and getting your clients and things of that nature. But did you do anything formal to, you know, get better at sales or like marketing and stuff like that? Or did you just kind of like wing it?
I did read a lot of books and I did a lot of trial and error, right? Like a lot of the books that I read, for example, way, 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 way back, it's How to Win Friends and Influence People, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a common book. And then a couple like sales books, I don't remember the topic, but most of the concepts were like, you know, just listen and ask questions, like leading questions. But like after you get those fundamentals, you also want to express your personality, right?
Because yeah.
if you just ask questions, you're not giving content. You're just listening, right? And you're just pulling content. But after a while, after you kind of build the initial rapport, you want to break the rapport.
Okay.
So for example, after you build rapport, like you know, have the fundamentals, like, oh, this is what they do, blah, blah, blah. And they feel like they're liking you and they got the juices flowing.
Yeah.
You want to start teasing them, right? Because what do you do when you're friends, when you're relaxed and you're, you know, super like gelling?
Yeah,
you
yeah,
make
yeah.
fun of them, you cut them off in their sentences, and then you're like, you're kind of aggressive, right? Or like, you don't care that much of how they feel, because that's what people that are close do, right? You're not super friendly with your family or something like that, or
sure.
your significant other,
sure.
or people that are close to you. You tease them a little bit, right? Or you push them, you pull, you do these kind of things.
So it's like pickup.
Sort of like pickup, right? And then after that, it's like you deepen the rapport, right? You talk about subjects that really matter, right?
Okay.
For example, like after you go through the shitty topics and stuff like that, you want to get deep in, like, for example, like, hey, what would you do in this situation super hypothetically, right? Or what would you, like, what are the things that you do that no one else does, right? Or
right.
like, what's a topic that you think that only you think about, like, that are super important to you, but no one else thinks that are important at all.
Okay.
Right? So once you get deep into this person and deep into their psyche, right, then you really have that, the topic that nobody treads. Like, what's the porn that you watch that you're kind of scared to review? you're scared to review to other people because you think it's, like, kind of weird, right? But trust me, if you just listen to that person talk about that weird-ass fetish, they're going to strangely like you, because you deep down inside, you want to share this kind of weird fetish you have with other people. Like, you like this kind of porn too? Oh my god, I thought I was the only one that liked this kind of porn. Trust me, that person is gonna like you.
Okay. So on my next sales call, it's like, hey, what have you been doing marketing for the last 3 months? Cool. And I'm just curious, what kind of porn do you watch that you don't ever want to share with?
So definitely don't go into that in a recorded sales call, because you're both of your asses are gonna get fired.
Yeah, yeah.
But
my own company, though, so
exactly,
I can't
exactly.
find myself.
Exactly. So maybe in person, where like you're sure there's no recording, like this recording here. But like, the goal of that is just to establish a sense of like true connection, right?
Yeah.
That's really empathy, like at
yeah.
its max.
Yeah.
Right? Empathy is like the ability to take a perspective of another person, and it's not even agreeing with them. Empathy is not agreeing with them. It's
okay.
just acknowledging that. It's like, oh, you're different and you have these kind of views and those are important to you.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, let me share because when you don't share something and people share their darkest secrets, they kind of feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Or for example, when they're uncomfortable, you need to share first.
Yeah.
Right? You need to be authentic first and be like, oh yeah, you know, the first time I did that, or like, you know what, I love donkey porn or something like that. Like,
okay.
Please don't quote me on that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's so weird that, you know, I love it when the donkey's penis, like, just goes big. Like, oh my god, like, that thing is so big.
I know you're using this as an example, but it sounds like you know a little bit too much
about
donkey porn.
A little bit too much, right? For example, like, That's gonna make people laugh, or like they're gonna just be like, oh my god, this guy is saying this, right? You know? So it opens the door, like okay, like if he's sharing it with me, I might as well share it. But once they share it, they feel kind of this little bit like, huh, it's not that bad to share this thing with another person like that. It's like, oh, it's cool. And then their oxytocin releases. And when that happens, right, it's easier for them to start having a conversation with you. And then when you're going in for the ask, right?
Yep.
You kind of already have that rapport done. You already have that dating phase over.
Yeah.
Then you can start asking for stuff that you both want to have a decision to.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're selling something to someone and you know that what you're selling to them is actually useful, right? There's a little bit of confidence there, right? That you can already break the ice. You already have that rapport. You go over there and you ask. And usually it's either going to be a yes or a no.
Right.
Right. Those are the only two conclusions.
Okay.
A maybe is either a yes or a no.
Right.
Right. So then you go And you go to as many no's as possible, right? And you ask questions every time you reach a no until there is a yes.
Okay.
Right? If there is no yes, then either you have qualified them incorrectly, right? And you said, like, for example, you thought they were a decision maker, you thought they had money, but you're wrong, right?
Right, right.
For example, they're not making six figures a month or six figures a year, therefore they're not in your income bracket, you were wrong,
right.
You can leave, right?
Right.
They disqualify themselves.
Yeah.
But if they do and they're saying no, why are they saying no? If they go through all your disqualifiers and they're still saying no, is it because you're an asshole, they don't like you yet?
Okay.
Or is it because you haven't shown them competency, right? You have not shown them that you're a better salesperson or you're a better expert than they are in their field. Why would they delegate work to you, right? If you were a CEO making a decision, would you hire yourself?
Right.
Because you have to be more efficient than them or in order for them to, like that. Like, and also, what is your price? For example, is it a 2x multiplier of what they're getting in value? Is it a 5x multiplier? Is it a 10x multiplier, right? That's why I set my price at 10 to 20% of what they get. So they get enough money to pay their staff and to grow their company,
yeah.
Right? It doesn't make sense for me to say, hey, give me 50%.
Right.
Or give me like 100K up front and they get no expected value,
right?
Would you ever, it's like poker. Are you gonna bet on this, you know, knowing that your expected value is not gonna make it?
Mm-hmm.
No. So that's how you kind of learn skills, is you kind of trial and error, kind of you learn these kind of things and you listen, right? You kind of find where what are they talking about, and then you just kind of, you know, you negotiate back and forth. You get to as many no's as possible.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. Let me make sure this is recording, because I don't want to. Okay, that's good.
Losing the concept.
That's good. That's good. That's recording.
Make sure you didn't lose the donkey dick part, because that was the best part.
No, yeah, yeah. You know, that reminds me of like a story. I was like interning, and the driver, she was like, oh yeah, well, it's just randomly out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. We're done with lunch, we're all interns, like, oh yeah, what kind of porn do you guys like to watch the most? And everyone like hesitated, right?
Of course.
Except me, because I'm like I'm like fucking shameless, right? I'm like, yeah, I really like lesbian porn, like solo right now,
yeah.
Right? And like, because I started kind of like sharing, I'm like, other people start sharing too, and it's just like kind of like vanilla-ish stuff, like boy girl threesomes, blah blah blah, like going around the car. And then the guy that went last is like the most like autistic intern that autistic person like I've ever met, like it. And then, like, you know, like I was really curious like what he would say, right? Because he's like, he probably has like a personality disorder or something like that. And it's like, yeah, I really like gangbangs. I'm like, okay. that's kind of weird. I don't know. Like, for me, gangbangs are kind of weird, but I feel like everybody, like, in the car, like, especially because it's coming from him, because he's not, like, a really dominant person, things like that, right? It's just, like, sort of incongruent. Like, when he said, oh, I really like gangbangs, like, I'm glad we're not talking about this outside and in his volume now. And then it's just, like, all of us looked at him, like, just like taken aback and like, what the fuck? So yeah, that your example reminded me of that story. But I think that's a good question to ask on any sales call, is what is your prospect's favorite porn?
Interesting.
So you've heard it here, I guess.
Don't quote me, folks.
We will. I'll put it in the notes. Victor D said, so when you're doing, I guess, marketing or otherwise, let's start with the business end first, right? Like, what are your metrics for success? Is it just like conversion? Is it like your hours put in? Is it like all those things? Like, because I know there's like metrics where it's like things are measurable, right? How many calls did I make today? That's something I can control. Conversion may be less like obvious that you can control, right? Because it really depends on the other person. Do you measure yourself by like any metrics, or
So the metric that is most important always is the sales metric, right? It's not how many leads you have. It's not how many people you talk to. It's how many people that you actually convert at the end of the day.
Okay.
Right. And if you're playing a game where you only need to have one or two people convert a year,
mm-hmm.
that's the game you want to play in. Because if you need to have like 100 people convert in a month, it's very stressful.
Right.
Right. Because you really have to dial down and get rejected. Let's say if your conversion rate is 1%, you're talking to, like, what is that, 10,000 people? Mm-hmm. That's a lot of people you need to talk to.
Yeah.
But let's say I only need to talk to 100 CEOs and my conversion rate is 1%, right? Then, and I only need to do that once or twice a year.
Right.
That's all I have to do, right? So that's, first of all, you need to start thinking in that way. Mm-hmm. That's the metric that you need to look at. And then you work backwards from there, right? So for example, now let's say instead of 1%, what if it's 0.01% or 0.1%, right? Still, I can still talk to 1,000 people a year and still get rejected. No problem. 10,000, it's not that, you know, I can space that out. I can do like 1,000 people a month. You know, that's like what? Like less than 40 people a day or something like that, right? So it's not that bad, right? And as soon as I get one, I'm gonna feel pretty hooked because that person's paying me a shitload of money, right? So first is that sales metric, right? The second would be, I always try to ask myself, like, what's the 1% that is making, what's the input, the 1% input that is affecting 50% of the output?
Yeah.
Because common question is like, what is the 80% of the
result, right?
But you can even scale that down even further and think about what's the 1%, right? Because if 20% affects 80%, you can do what's the 4% that it's affecting 95%, and then what's the 1% that's affecting 50%.
Yeah.
So what's the 1% affecting 50%?
So
I only need to pay attention to like one thing that affects every other thing.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And I just focus and dial in on that thing. Right? So let's say, for example, I notice when I talk to people, let's say I talk to 50 people and I'm just bursting and I'm not even paying attention to what metrics I'm using.
Yeah.
And then I look back and I reflect and I notice like, oh shit. Like, 40-year-old engineers that are married, that are Asian, that are Chinese, mm-hmm. really like me.
Oh, right. Okay.
Right. That are like that.
The
like
fuck. All
right. Like that. That come from like mainland China or something like that. Right. They really like me. Or like Indian that are married, that are 40. Oh shit. You know what? Married outline like Asians that are other like, you know, that do apps, engineers really like me.
Huh.
Like, why does this happen, right? You notice that there's like a pattern now.
Yeah, yeah.
So that means if I'm talking to 50 people, I'm not gonna burst to people that don't look like fucking engineers, right?
Okay.
Or like if I only can talk to 5 people, I might as well just talk to 5 engineers this day, right? Or if I only have enough energy to talk to these amount of people, as soon as they said I'm working in Bitcoin and I'm not an engineer, I'm gone. You know what I mean? Like, sure, Bitcoin is exciting now, but I cannot personally impact Bitcoin for the life of me.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's great that Bitcoin has bubbled and greatly then that I'll put some money into it, but I'm not going to put a lot of money because I cannot influence Bitcoin for the life of me.
Right.
I can do something else that even maximizes my income much more than Bitcoin itself.
Right, right.
Right. So that's the two metrics that I look for. What the sales metrics, and then what is the 1% that's affecting 50%?
Yeah, the 1%, 50%. Do you know Perry Marshall by any chance?
The sales marketing 80/20
yeah,
guy?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because in his book, yeah, he kind of goes through that. It's like, oh, what's the 20 of the 20 to the 20 of the 20%?
Right.
It's like, yeah, okay, I get it. I get it, dick.
Exactly.
I mean, it's a very powerful concept because a lot of stuff, a lot of people we talk to, it's just like, it doesn't really, like, there's no result, and you can kind of tell early on that there's no result associated with it. So it's sort of like, well, let's just save both of us some time. It's not meant to be, right, in this lifetime. And then I guess, like, we'll go more philosophical now. Do you have any metrics of success for, like, outside of business, like in life in general? Yeah.
Outside in life in general, I think a very good metric is to see how many people that you're actually making like an impact on. For example, let's say you go through a week, right? How many smiles have you really given to other people, right? Let's not even talk about the amount of like efficiency and output that you did in business.
Sure.
Not talking about the money you made.
Sure.
But actually, how many like people have you personally impacted?
Sure.
Like, has your girlfriend smiled more this week?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Not even more than last week, but like, has she like actually smiled because you did something for her? Like, has her life been a little bit better since you were there?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, and then like, has your parents, have you talked to your parents this week? Have you made them smile, right? Like, or have you made them frown this week? Or like, are you causing more stress in their life? Like, those things I feel a lot of people are missing.
Okay.
In because they're so focused on their macro, like they're doing too many big things.
Yeah.
And they're not doing, they're focusing on the micros, which causes a sustained thing in the whole ecosystem, right? That's a very good metric, right? How many people are you personally giving a smile on
to? Smiles and cries.
Smiles and cries, right?
Okay.
The X's and O's right there. Another good metric for like deeper philosophy would probably be like how clean your mind is. For example, like how much clutter do you have in your mind, right? Like how much, like when you close your eyes, like can you actually focus? Like for example, your state is a very, very important thing, right? Your mental state,
right?
Right. Like, are you performing at maximum capacity?
Yeah.
Right. Are you churning out good content? If not, like, why is there noise there? Right. Kind of like check yourself. Like if your car was having some fucked up problems, you'd be kind of fucked. You're scared, right?
Right. Right.
Because like, what if like, for example, like you do a turn on the freeway and your car doesn't turn?
Yeah, you'd be dead. Yeah.
You're dead, right?
You're fucked. Yeah.
And for example, let's say. You're making a $10,000 decision, but you're only performing at 70% efficiency.
Okay.
You're making subpar decisions, right? And what if you make a bad choice at the wrong time? You're fucking up key decisions, right? So it's another metric is just on a, like a on a macro philosophy like scale is like how much noise and shit is going on in your brain right now? Like when you close your eyes, are you performing at maximum efficiency? And if not, what the fuck is holding you back, right? Because you can notice, like, when you close your eyes, like, and you just meditate. Sometimes you can't meditate.
That's not sometimes for me. That's, like, all the time.
Exactly. So, most likely, it's one or two problems. For example, like, if you think out loud in your head a lot, or if you just, like, talk a lot in general.
Yeah.
When you pause and you stop talking, you get anxiety.
Okay.
Because there's so, that you're so used to that chatter.
Oh, I see.
Right. So when you stop and you stop that chattering in your head, you get anxious.
Okay.
Or like when you don't know what to talk about or what to think about, you get very anxious, because that loop stops. Right. It's just like you're always funneling drugs into your system.
Oh,
and then you
I see.
Stop.
Yeah.
And then your body just goes, "Are we gonna attack? Why you stop talking? Huh? What's going on? What's going on? What's going on? What's going on? What's going on?" and you go into this shock.
Right.
Right? So what you do is you kind of close your eyes and then you turn off that audio, right? And you focus on visual. Because remember, there's visual, kinesthetic, and audio, right?
Yeah.
So you stop the visual and you pretend you're mute. Like, how would you be with your mute, right? And then you just kind of ask yourself a question like, why, what color is the sky? And then what color could be the sky or something like that. You just focus yourself on a question, right? An abstract question. And you cannot answer verbally. You can only answer imagery and you pretend you're deaf.
Okay.
So then your brain starts to imagine images.
Oh, I see.
And then since your body is, your mind is overcompensating now, right? It's not thinking of, like in terms that you're familiar with. It's actually pulling yourself back and you're being objective. For example, like when you want to give advice to yourself, you don't give yourself advice. You just pretend you're giving your friend that advice. For example, like what should you do if your friend is, you know, like can't get some girlfriends or getting a dating advice? You give that person advice.
Okay.
Like, this is A, B, and C. Then you give yourself that same advice. Like what if your friend had the same problems as you? What advice would you give them?
Okay.
And it's more logical for you to follow that thing. Because you're objective. So when you pull your brain out and you're being objective and you're like, it's doing these visual circles and stuff like that,
yep.
Your brain calms down and it becomes like, oh shit, I gotta focus on the sensory. Oh, okay.
Okay.
And then you step back and you imagine yourself like your breathing patterns, like how does your heart feel? Like what's the senses that are going on? What's the air smell like? Those kind of things, when you're focusing on those kind of things, your brain stops that chatter and it refocuses and recenters you. And when you refocus and you recenter, you get a stronger sense of self. You're grounded, right?
Okay.
And when you ground yourself, you can make better decisions. and you're not jumping, you know, because you're focusing away from the ADD to the OCD, and it balances yourself, right? You have a scale that balances yourself, and you're like, okay, I'm balanced.
Okay.
Interesting, right?
So getting rid of a lot of noise that's like kind
of
like
a lot of noise
interrupting what your brain can actually do.
Yeah.
Kind of like throwing away the spam, I guess.
Throwing away the spam. You're entering that fucking the trash bin.
Yeah. I need to work on meditating, man. It's so bad. It's so bad lately.
You could try it. Like, for example, right now, like, we'll set the timer for 1 minute. I think you can do 1 minute of meditation, right?
Just I'm nervous it. Now, man.
You're nervous.
Well,
I'm putting you on the spot.
If I do this...
you can do the go to Google search timer. What time is it now, though? I need to leave at
2:30.
Okay. I need to leave at 2:40. Is that cool? All
right. Right. Yeah, I only have... like two more questions.
We'll do it quick.
All right, we'll blast through these questions. Timer, Google, timer. I don't need to type Google in a Google search. The fuck? 100.
All right, so close your eyes. Pretend you're mute, right? And I just want you to imagine a butterfly, one butterfly, right? And you're mute, you can't listen, you can't say anything. Just imagine one butterfly, right? And look at the butterfly flapping its wings, right? And just in your head, right? Don't say anything. What color is that butterfly? Right, don't say anything. Notice the color of the butterfly. Now there's two butterflies. Now there's three butterflies. Notice the detail of each butterfly. Relax. Relax. Now notice your breathing, right? Notice the shallowness of your breathing. Now manipulate your breathing. Control your breathing. Pay attention to your breathing. Now pay attention to the butterfly. Butterfly went missing for a second, right? Go back to the butterfly. All three of those butterflies. What is the texture of the wing, right? Don't tell me verbally, just tell me visually. Look at the wing. Look at more details of the wing. Look at the wings, right? Now notice the antennas, like what's the color of the antenna? How dark is that antenna? How long is that antenna? Now put me three more butterflies, or six butterflies, right? Go back to your breathing. Manipulate your breathing, right? Breathe slower. Nice. Notice your shoulders. The feeling, the sensation on your shoulders. It's there. You have shoulders, right? Now come back.
Oh, it's been a minute.
How's it feel?
It's good.
Right?
Yeah, I think that pretending to be mute thing is like pretty helpful.
Pretty helpful, right? Because it focuses your mind to visualize, right? It turns off the
Because like normally like butterfly and then like some other shit.
It's and like, then you think about other shit, right? It's like your mind is already thinking about five other things.
Fuck, I gotta do this, man. Exactly. All right. Let's blast through these last ones real quick. All
right.
They're all stolen from Tim Ferriss. Fuck it. Actually, the first two are, what's been like the most impactful book for you, if any, and what's
4-hour work week.
4-hour work week? Is it just because like I'm like mentioning Tim Ferriss?
No, it's like legit. Really, because like that's the first time I was introduced to 80-20 principle.
Okay.
Like legit, right? It's also the most detrimental book to me.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because like I was like, I have to 80-20 everything.
Oh,
and
I
then
see,
for
I
example,
see.
Like if you always think about 80-20, you're always risk adverse too, because you're thinking about what is the 80-20 that can affect everything.
Oh,
right.
I can't do this. It's a waste of time.
Right? And then you're like risk adverse to everything.
Okay.
Like your friend tells you to hang out. Like, no, dude, that's not in my 80-20 quota. I can't do that.
These metrics don't line up. Fuck.
You're a worthless friend. You're not in the top five.
And what's like the most gifted book? If you've gifted books, I guess.
The most gifted book would be How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Okay.
Everybody likes that book.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
Everybody really likes that book. Or Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad, yeah.
Yeah, I really like The Cash Flow Quadrant, you know?
Okay.
Like,
okay.
Those are the two books that nobody hates to get.
Okay.
Right? Because those two books is like, it's gold. It's like, it always works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
House on Fire, three things that you take from the fire. Three material things. Like everyone else, everything else is like safe.
Cash.
Cash. You just have cash under your bed or some shit? Like,
hey,
cash.
For emergency cash.
Okay, emergency cash.
Cash, let's see, laptop.
Laptop, okay, so you can like get more cash with your laptop.
Get more cash with the laptop and... What's important that I can't buy again? Even my laptop I can buy again. I guess... Mattress.
It's a fucking fire. Yeah, you're like, you're not gonna make...
Fuck the fire! I'll use my mattress to, you know, put out the fire. All
right, so his short answer is he won't make it out alive. He's taking zero things because he's dead. Very stoic answer. So last question here, right?
What is death?
I mean, like, you're a pretty proactive guy, and I'm like, kind of proactive sometimes, depending on mood. What do you think the difference is between, say, someone that, like, is actually taking action versus those who kind of pontificate and think about it, but never take
a step? I thought you said two questions. These are five questions.
Yeah, I lied. I'm a liar.
So the difference between proactivity and not proactivity, I'm assuming it's more towards what's the person's, like, overall vision or their goal for themselves.
Okay.
For example, if your goal is just like material well-being and like, you know, like you just want to live a comfortable life.
Yeah.
You can just get a day job and you just follow, do your day job, you get a paycheck, you go back, you spend that extra amount of income on whatever you want to spend, and then you just live your consistent life, right? Mm-hmm. There's no need for you to invest more time and energy if you don't want to.
Right.
Right? But I think the difference between people that want to make a bigger impact is because their goal is bigger. I'm assuming people like Bill Gates and like a lot of driven people that are successful, it's not only that they were lucky, because luck plays a huge motherfucking part.
Sure.
It's like people that are equally skilled in poker, but one person is gonna hit a fucking royal flush on you,
right?
And you're screwed,
right?
Right. And yeah, you have like quads, like you flop quads,
right?
The motherfucker runners,
right?
Like, royal flush,
right?
And the pot is $5 billion.
$5 billion, sure, okay.
You're fucked, like, yeah, no matter what. Or like you build Facebook and you, like, you know, you get lucky at the right time, or Uber at the right time, right? And you're validated at $1 billion.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like luck plays a huge part, but it's also like your vision and your creativity and your drive, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not only follow your passion, like, for example, it's not only you follow your passion, but you also have to follow the things that you're very good at.
Okay.
Right? And it's not only like you can only follow things that you're very good at and not be passionate about it. You have to follow things that you're very, very good at and you're very, very passionate about. You have to be both.
Okay.
It's like if you... So people, please don't hate me, but if you get a girlfriend, right?
You've said other things that are probably worse.
If
yeah,
you get a girlfriend, right, and you don't like her,
yeah,
right, and you don't love her,
yeah,
but you're just really good at attracting that type of person,
sure,
because like say like scientists, people like you, and like, you know,
yeah,
but you
yeah,
don't really like scientists, so you can get a scientist girlfriend, they really like you, but you don't really like them because you're just really good at acquiring people. Don't hate me for saying acquire, I'm just using these terminologies,
sure,
right? Just like
they made it through this far. I
exactly
think
like you can like you're not going to be really satisfied because that you're not intrinsically motivated, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like you're not intrinsically attracted,
yeah,
to this type,
yeah,
but if you go and try to chase people that you're intrinsically attracted to but they're not attracted to you, mm-hmm, your life is going to be really bad because you're going to suffer a lot,
right?
Right, have a one-way attraction, have all this passion, but you don't get to burst.
Mm.
Right, it's you always get
different
balls,
kind of burst, yeah.
No, the same kind of burst.
Oh, okay.
You're always like feeling like, oh my god, like my life sucks, like why doesn't the people like me, like that I like me back. You have to find things that let you fall in love with them and they love you back, right? Those people, like, and that's great because only like it's gonna be a very small percentage of the world.
Sure.
It's gonna be a very small percentage of the world where you click, and you click very hard.
Right.
Right. And that's the same thing in your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right. There's only gonna be a small amount of things where you're gonna get lucky, and then you're gonna have a decent following, and then these people are gonna pay you a shitload of money, and you're very good, and right. you're like very top world class at it, right? And those things that you do, they're gonna pay you 100 times over than what you really need,
right?
Right. And so that's why a lot of people are not proactive, because they find something that just gives them a paycheck where they're very good at it, mm-hmm. and they may like it, but it might not be the most optimal thing. So they never push forward. And usually when you try to do something new, like for example, like do something that other people haven't done,
yeah.
those rewards are greater.
Right.
But
right.
those rewards are riskier.
Right.
Right. But I think for people that are more creative, like you can only follow the things that are kind of risky and rewarding. Like
right.
for example, like you told me earlier, like you just wanted to see like if you could fall down that ice scope, right?
If I can slide down faster.
You're
yeah.
just curious.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and people that are naturally creative are just naturally curious.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? They're
yeah.
like, and I think people that are a little bit more practical and not driven, they're not gonna be like, I'm gonna, you know, be curious and see if I can go down there, you know?
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's 2:41.
Okay.
So you're probably late. I mean, we can certainly do like more later.
Sure.
If you want. But yeah, I think this is pretty good. So I guess I'll end this part here. Yeah, thanks so much. And I'm stopping. I don't know how to take people out, man. See you on the next episode.
Thanks for having me.